Hi there, I'm Todd Fraser with another ANZIC CTG podcast from the 19th annual CTG meeting here in the beautiful Noosa Heads. Joining me on this episode is Marianne Chapman from Adelaide to discuss her role in the upcoming trial, Target Nutrition. Marianne, thank you very much for joining us.
It's a pleasure.
So this study is about energy effectively. Mm-hmm. What do we know about the energy requirements of an ICU patient?
Yeah, so basically we don't know how much energy to give our patients to optimise clinical outcomes, but there have been a number of recent studies. So there's the Arabi study, the Eden study particularly, but all those studies are somewhat limited, and those in particular weren't blinded, so they're open to bias. They were underpowered to show an effect on mortality. And this is one of the big problems with nutrition studies, is that people, or perhaps not only nutritional studies, people tend to overestimate the likely benefits of a treatment. And if you think about feeding, you're not really expecting a huge mortality benefit from giving more calories. And so a study of, say, 1,000 patients like they had in Eden in trial is underpowered to show a big difference in survival. And the other issue is that none of those studies have actually managed to give a full nutritional requirement to the patient, to a patient group. And that's a problem with nutrition in general in ICU patients. So what we prescribe is not what the patient actually gets. So, and in general, and this has been shown repeatedly in observational studies, patients only receive about 60% of what you prescribe. So the usual sort of calorie prescription would be about 2,000 calories a day for a normal size adult, and patients usually only get about 1,200 calories a day, and that's been shown repeatedly.
So are we basing the estimates of the amount of energy that a patient would need based on their normal background metabolic rate and those sorts of things?
Yeah, so people do try and make it a bit more scientific and measure energy expenditure. Mm. And that can be done with a metabolic cart, but that is not something which is suitable for routine clinical practice. It's too cumbersome. There are lots of situations where it's just inaccurate, and it takes ages to do a reading. So, and you probably, if you really wanted to do it properly, you should do it daily, because requirements or energy expenditure probably changes over time. But it's just not something that lends itself to that sort of involvement in clinical care. So then people use equations to try and calculate energy requirements, but none of those have been shown to reliably predict energy consumption. And so then we often come back to just a very simple equation of 25 to 30 kilocalories per kilo per day.
So we know that, well, we're uncertain about the actual amount that we need to give them. Mm. And we know that when we do decide on a number, we only get a certain percentage of that into the patient.
Exactly.
If we were to give more energy, what would be the plausible mechanism for that making a difference to patient outcomes?
Well, this is speculative, but the idea would be that we would prevent the muscle breakdown, which is seen rapidly in patients, in ICU patients who are staying in bed for a long time. And with that loss of muscle function, you would hope, or if you prevent that loss of muscle function, you would hope that you get better functional outcomes, and that may translate into a survival benefit as well. Obviously, muscle also then involves diaphragm, so we are also talking about ability to wean patients off the ventilator. Mm. But again, that's all speculative, that hasn't been shown, and that's the sort of thing that we're trying to show. Yep. in this target study.
So in this study, the extra energy isn't protein-based energy, is it?
No, so we have gone to great lengths in this study to isolate the question to calories. So the two groups are getting different amounts of calories, but the same amount of protein. So the protein is also a very interesting question, but it's a different question, which is not being addressed in this trial.
But the hypothesis is that the muscles, for example, or protein breakdown in a septic patient, for example, is being used for energy, and that if you can supplement that energy in a different way, you could reduce the amount of protein energy
that's released. That's correct. And you're right, because I think your implication is that protein intake may be the more important factor for muscle breakdown, and that's perfectly plausible, and we don't know, and that is another study.
And that's hopefully what the trial will partly answer anyway.
Yeah, exactly.
So tell us about the trial. How is it designed?
Okay, so the target trial is a trial where we're randomising the patients to receive what we're calling full calorie delivery compared to standard care. So full calorie delivery works out at about 2,000 calories a day. And standard care, we know from all those observational studies, is about 60% of 2,000. So, and we did a feasibility study to prepare for this trial. We randomised over 100 patients. And the technique we're using, the strategy we've got to increase calorie delivery, is that we are using a concentrated feed. And with that strategy, that means that we can do a blinded study. So this will be the first blinded study looking at calorie delivery in ICU patients. Because we've got two different feeds, one's more concentrated than the other, so it's 1 kilocal per meal versus 1.5 kilocals per meal, and we showed in our feasibility study that using the concentrated feed at the same rate, we deliver just under 50% extra calories per day. So we demonstrated in that we had good separation in terms of calorie delivery, and we also, in that study, in the feasibility study, looked for any complications of using a concentrated feed and delivering more calories. So we looked at gut tolerance, we found no problems, and glucose, also no problems. And also, very encouragingly, we saw a very strong trend towards an improvement in survival. So all of those things made it logical for us to move on into a phase three trial. So the target study is a big phase three study, 4,000 patients. So as I said, the previous studies were underpowered. So this study we've powered to detect a difference, a 4% difference in mortality. So we used a baseline mortality based on our feasibility study, so 28%, looking for a 4% improvement down to 24%. So we're powered to detect that. We're looking at 90-day survival as our primary outcome. We're also looking at a number of secondary outcomes, the most important of which is functional outcome, because that's where we really probably predict that we will show a difference.
How do you measure that? Like, what do you
use? Yeah, so that's a really important question, and there's a lot of research going on at the moment in ICU circles looking at how to measure functional outcomes. The SF-36 is the traditional way, but we regard it as a very blunt tool. So Adam Dean is actually heading up that area of the study. He did another preliminary study called the RACE study, where they looked at comparing patients' activity level. So, for example, whether they're working or not, or whether they were in a nursing home or not, and looking at the change in that functional level over the period of the study.
Right.
So that looked quite promising, and so we're going to use a variation on that for this study. But we're still going to use SF-36 because it is a standard tool and probably more widely recognised.
Do you standardise the approach to maximising the delivery of enteral feed during the study, or is that left open to the institution?
Yeah, so we have a couple of rules, but our aim with this study in terms of methodology was to make it as simple as possible because it is a big trial involving 56 different units, so we wanted also to make it sort of unit friendly. So our rules are obviously that they have to use the feed formula that we're providing. And we have a target rate, which is calculated according to the patient's ideal body weight, which is calculated from their height. But otherwise, the sites can manage the feeding according to what they usually do with feeding protocol. So they might start slowly and increment slowly up to a goal rate. We suggest they reach goal by 48 hours, if possible. But other things like stopping feeding or giving promotility agents, that's completely up to them. Whatever their normal feeding protocol is, they can follow that for those other aspects.
Just briefly, it sounds easy to bring a trial like this to fruition, but I would imagine there's an awful lot of hard work and background work that needs to go in it. Yeah. Can you just sort of explain what the process might be?
Yeah, and it also takes many years. Mm. So we have, I think, come up with a fairly simple trial, but that doesn't really indicate the amount of work and thought that has gone into every different part of it.
Yep.
We've got a working party, which is a group of, I think, about half a dozen of us, and we meet regularly and have been meeting regularly for many years, setting up the protocol. And we've also got a management committee who we then take, the working party then sends their proposals to the management committee, and that's an additional group of people who go through everything. So there's a lot of thought and discussion which goes into every part of the study.
I'm sure there is. Finally, are you looking for sites to be part of the trial?
How would they get in contact? The trial's already started. So we started recruiting in June. So we probably have got enough sites, although if anyone's particularly interested, we could probably take more on. The study is actually going to finish earlier than predicted. The recruitment rate is extremely fast. Mm. So once a site is involved, they tend to be able to recruit patients quite easily and quickly. We've simplified the inclusion exclusion criteria as much as possible. So we actually think we'll finish recruiting in probably January, February next year. And our 56 sites will all be recruiting from about June, so we've got a big rush on towards the end of the year. But if anyone is particularly interested and wants to join up, then they can contact me, or Lorraine Little is our project manager, who's working very hard from the ANZIC RC.
Tremendous. Marianne, thanks very much for your time today.
Pleasure.
Thanks for joining me again on this CTG podcast. For more episodes, check out my blog at www.essentialcriticalcare.com.